From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam.
And with that wonderful excerpt from scientist Carl Sagan, we begin our second episode, appropriately named Episode 1, of the Is This a Bad Idea podcast. Welcome back. Today we're going to talk about the Voyager mission, and we're going to discuss many of the aspects surrounding both the musical, the philosophical, and the scientific aspects of this entire project, which is just a wonderful part of history. And yeah, let's get right on with it.
All right.
So yeah, how are you? Welcome back.
Well, I'm not going anywhere, sadly, because we're all quarantined at the moment.
Well, yeah, we aren't doing that much during this period of time.
Yeah, but it is a wonderful period of time to think about the past. And, you know, we are almost 43 years after the launch of the Voyager spacecraft, which is our topic of today. And it's something that has, at least it has amazed my heart since I was a little kid.
Yeah, same for me. Ever since I was little, I have always been amazed by topics such as astronomy, astrophysics, and science in general. And I believe that scientists such as Carl Sagan or Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye, those speakers, those science communicators that we grew up with, are the pillars on which the interest and the curiosity of many young people around the world is based on. And I think we're going to do our part to honor the late Carl Sagan with this small, short, pretty basic introduction to the Voyager mission and some of the aspects behind this. So how should we start? What should we talk about first?
Well, I think that most people have heard about the Voyager Golden Record and as a whole, the Voyager spacecraft and the Voyager mission. Thanks to Carl Sagan, my first introduction to the Voyager Golden Record was when I was a kid, watching reruns of Cosmos, of the original one. And I remember when he was reciting that little speech that in hindsight feels a little bit more like a poem. And I think he wonderfully highlighted how science can be beautiful. It's not only a mere sequence of numbers and data. It can be art. It itself can be art. And one of the beautiful things that the Voyager Golden Record has is maybe the most wonderful art form that the humans can create.
Yeah, giving the universe a little piece of humanity in the hopes that someone in thousands or even millions of years will encounter it. Okay, so we think that first we should talk about some of the general, more number-specific aspects of the mission. So does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right, so one of the main things, like the main aspect of the Voyager mission, was studying the outer planets of our solar system. In our case, that would be Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, in that order. So there's a very interesting thing that happens where it's not that easy to visit all the outer planets with a spacecraft launched from Earth, because the gravitational pull of the sun is so strong that if you don't send a spacecraft into outer space, you know, pardon my poor use of words, if you don't do it at a specific time, you won't have the opportunity to do what the Voyager does, which is going through all those planets and then just going into the void, into outer space indefinitely. So this alignment that allows for a spacecraft to go beyond all of the planets happens once every 176 years or so. And it just so happens that the last time that this was possible was in the late 70s. And since the orbits and the trajectories of planets and satellites and everything in outer space is extremely predictable, we managed to calculate ahead of time that around 1977, 1978 would be a great launch window for a spacecraft to go and study and explore these outer planets. So, yeah, the Voyager mission consists of two spacecraft that were launched just a couple of weeks apart in mid-1977. Voyager 2 was launched on the 20th of August of 1977, and Voyager 1 was launched a couple of weeks later on the 5th of September. Just as a general trajectory, they went through Jupiter in March of 1979 and through Saturn in late 1980. And after that, they just kept going. Those planets are so huge and have such a great gravitational pull that it allowed for the spacecraft to kind of have a slingshot effect and just increase their velocity dramatically in a way that allowed them to escape the gravitational pull of the sun and just go into interstellar space, which is where they are right now.
If I remember correctly, there are some videos available in YouTube that simulate that trajectory of the probe launched. I think it was either by India or SpaceX, sorry for mixing those two, that actually uses a very similar system of gravitational pull to go around the solar system. So if you want like a more modern reference to what it must have been like, it's available on YouTube. It's very interesting to see how it works graphically, to see the math happen in real time.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, what else? Oh, so
I would like to comment on something. Is that the Voyager mission was something that it had to be planned very well. So the project that kind of preceded Voyager, it preceded Voyager, was a Pioneer project, the Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11, which were launched in 1972. What I find interesting is that NASA was trying to do this very same thing. Well, they actually they executed it properly with the Voyager spacecraft, but with Pioneer, they were doing a kind of like a demo of what the mission was going to look like. And Pioneer actually achieved many of the objectives that Voyager will later try to emulate. Something wonderful about Pioneer is that I was actually confusing Pioneer with the Voyager spacecraft, because I remember the Pioneer plaque. How is it pronounced? Plaque?
I think it's plaque. Yeah.
I was when I was thinking about Voyager, I used sometimes mixed up in my mind the Pioneer plaque with the engravings in the gold record. And what I find beautiful about it is that it has that very iconic image of the man and the woman, the man with his right hand raised, kind of like salutating those who were, if somebody was going to see it. It also has an illustration of a hydrogen atom, of the distance of the planets, and maybe kind of like the general trajectory course of Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11. I think it's something worth discussing, because just like Newton once said, we stand on the shoulder of giants, and this mission was was the rock upon which the church of the Voyager spacecraft was built.
And after that, just we have managed to do so many more incredible missions in outer space. And one of the things, one of the foundations of modern projects at both NASA and private enterprises like SpaceX or Blue Origin are thanks to the advances made by Carl Sagan's team back in the 70s. It's just...
Yeah,
it's great, honestly. Just seeing everyone collaborate through the decades, ever since we began the space race and the Apollo program, and ever since then we just haven't stopped. And it's great that sooner or later we're just gonna keep going and go back to the moon and go to Mars and all those things that expand the scope of human exploration.
My co-host is a fan of Jules Verne, and it's wonderful to think that when you read his books, when you read A Thousand Leagues Under the Sea or A Trip to the Moon, to think that going to space, going to the moon back then was science fiction, to think that Pluto, or was it Neptune, was seen for the first time around the late 1800s. And now we live in an age where there's such a thing as private space enterprises that want to achieve things like the colonization of the moon and maybe establishing a permanent settlement on Mars. And we could think the Voyager spacecraft and the Pioneer program and all of the advancement that NASA did in the 60s and the 70s for the ideas we have to expand the human, to expand or reach through space.
Yeah, many things to be thankful for, and it's definitely just limited by human ambition. We definitely have the technology and the means to go back. We just need inspiration and political will, I would say, because nothing on Earth happens without politics. So, you know, it's a shame that they defunded NASA after the Apollo program, and that even though Donald Trump has said that he would put us back into the moon, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, especially considering the global recession we find ourselves in at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
But still.
That's going to be rough.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know, we'll see.
In between the misery, I think we should be thankful of the work of the men and women who have done such wonderful things for us.
Yeah. I mean, it's all of the chaos. Okay, you know, moving on, we should probably talk a little bit about the actual golden record aboard the Voyager, because there are a lot of interesting things to mention, and hopefully along the way, we will learn something. They have a lot of scientific terms in it, and at the same time, it has a lot of a very philosophical and cultural, it has a very philosophical and cultural aspect built into it. It's really interesting, and the fact that it's just going at, hold on, I have the number right here. It's going at 17 kilometers per second in interstellar space, just hoping that it will be captured by an intelligent species in hundreds of thousands or even millions of years. It's just something to be very excited about, even if it's not going to happen in our lifetimes or our children's lifetimes or humanity, basically.
I think maybe by the time our grandchildren are born, or it will be better to say the grandchildren of our siblings are born, I think one day, sadly, we will see on the news that maybe, I think that's the most probable destiny for the Voyager spacecraft, is that it's probably just going to crash into some space debris. That's probably what's most likely going to happen. But if it doesn't, I think there's a very philosophical question to the golden record and to the project itself, because if you think about it, the Golden Record is a time capsule. It's kind of like how Carl Sagan said, it's a bottle thrown into the cosmic ocean, but it's a bottle that's filled with cultural artifacts up to 1977, up to the day that the probe was launched. Sorry, the spacecraft was launched. So to think that let's put a completely hypothetical situation that there's a close a spacefaring civilization not too far away in terms of the universe, so that it's a couple of thousand or even million light years from Earth. If there's a species that's able to decode it, and if we're able to make contact with them, the humans that launched the spacecraft will probably be dead by a margin of tens of thousands of years. It will be the equivalent that ancient Egypt had launched something similar to this. It will be as if when the first iron cultures were developing in Europe had launched the Voyager Golden Record, and now some aliens were talking with us.
Yeah, I think it would be as foreign and strange to the aliens as it would be to the humans that live.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting remark. The humans will be so different to the ones who sent the spacecraft in the first place that you could make the argument that human civilization will have changed so much that the aliens will encounter a completely different civilization. What they thought they were going to find, they never found it because it had changed so much that it will be unrecognizable.
It will be gone, and who knows if there will be any humans left on Earth, because considering the inevitable heat death of our sun in about 5 billion years, the only way for humanity to survive is to pursue interplanetary exploration and settlements. Otherwise, eventually we're all going to be dead. Not us, but generations down the line.
That's one of the things that maybe the project didn't account for, that, you know, just like Elon Musk and Neil deGrasse Tyson have commented on it, the most likely route for the eventual survival of a species is to eventually leave Earth and find permanent settlement in other planets.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going on about
70 minutes now.
We're going on about 17 minutes. We should try to keep this episode at 35 to 40 minutes tops, because it's easier for people to digest and to listen to it in one sitting, which in my opinion is the ideal way to listen to podcasts, because it just blows when you have to cut halfway through and then you forget all about the first part when you sit down later in the day, or even days later, to listen to the rest.
The whole point of this episode is that science and music is fun.
Yeah, we don't have to get very technical or boring about it. We can just discuss our general feelings around it, discuss some of the more principal aspects around the mission and the record and the whole thing in general. Okay,
I think we should talk a little bit about the pictures before we address the music. Just like a very short segment, so people have an idea what has been immortalized in the, you know, on the spacecraft.
Yeah, that's great. You know, this we should probably mention that before we talk about it, there's a series of diagrams and drawings on the plaque on the Golden Record that highlights the way that you play it. It basically, you know, for lack of a better explanation, and because we don't have much time or, frankly, ability to explain specifically how it works, basically what it has, it's a bunch of explanations about the trajectory that the aircraft has taken, considering pulsar radiation and pulsar waves that are sent throughout the cosmos and it basically triangulates those signals into a central position, which represents Earth. So if a civilization were to find it at some point, they would have a way to detect where it came from. Also, the record has some instructions on how to play it, basically how you would play it like a vinyl. You have to make sure that you have a revolution, a rotation of the entire thing every 3.6 seconds or so. The record takes about 1 hour to play, considering the images, the music, the sounds, all the things that we're going to talk about in a bit. And yeah, it has a lot of explanations if you want to check it out and see for yourself more in detail how it goes. Yeah, just do it. It's not that hard to find.
Yeah, thank God it's a public property. It's all on the NASA.gov website.
And there are a lot of YouTube videos that you can check out that are brief and really entertaining that will explain this whole situation better than we ever could. Anyway, let's talk about the images for a little bit. Do you have your tab open?
So yeah, I have it all right here.
All right,
so
go for it.
So the first image is it's a lot of scientific stuff that I don't think I'm very able to explain them properly, but it's mostly just diagrams of the course of that kind of, I think, the orbits of our galaxy. There's also, it kind of explains.
Yeah, it basically has. All right, I can take this one. Then you can talk about.
Thank you.
It has some science in binary that basically describes how our decimal system works. It also has a lot of the measures of time and weight and distance that we use with the metric system, because we don't use the English system anywhere but the United States. You know, Americans are stupid and they ruined it. But
I think they also use it in Liberia and in like Indonesia.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter.
I mean, it doesn't matter. The Americans ruined it. But that's a discussion.
They should just switch to metric.
Yeah, that's a discussion for another episode. So let's not get into that.
Yeah, you should write that down. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right. It basically has some information about our solar system, about the size and the orbits and the period of these orbits of some of the planets that we have in our solar system. Okay, so those are the first few images. Moving on, then, I think that you can take it from there.
Yeah, so the beauty about the first images is that kind of explains the way we understand the universe. It kind of shows like how the human brain works. And then it shows kind of illustration of what's being portrayed in those images. It shows kind of like the color gradient. It shows a picture of the moon surface. It shows a picture of the moon from afar, a picture of Jupiter, a picture of Earth. There's no landmass discernible on the picture, but it shows a close-up of the world's oceans. Then there
it
are
talks
some
about
images.
The chemical composition of the atmosphere, actually.
Oh,
if
shit.
You look closer, you can see,
yeah, that's
you,
nitrogen,
yeah,
oxygen,
the
water,
symbols.
The carbon dioxide. What's the
carbon dioxide?
B?
What
is that? What's 1B? The one that's close to a 100th. Oh shit! Oh. That's a I knew someone would recognize that landmass. That's the Red Sea. That's Egypt and the Red Sea. It's a little bit hard to make it out, but that's Egypt and the Red Sea.
Yeah. All right. So let's not talk about the content of the images too much, because since this is a podcast, our listeners can't actually see what we're talking about.
Yeah. So there's still a lot of science, and it shows how the DNA. It's composed and how humans reproduce. It shows a picture of an illustration of a sperm cell going into an egg. How do you say it again?
An ovum or an egg. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. What I actually wanted to address, and there's still a little bit of science. It's some pictures that kind of like actually show more, explain much better what the human condition is. Rather than the science itself, I think it's something beautiful that they added a picture of a mother breastfeeding her child. And I think that there's a picture of the Olympics, and it shows, you know, how humans are different. There are pictures of black men, white men, Asian people. There's a picture of all children from all races, looking at a globe. One of the funniest pictures in the record is one that shows how kind of like humans eat. I find it pretty funny. The one where the guy is drinking water from a wine jug. And it works in the way that it shows, you know, humans, you know, how we drink water and how water behaves.
Yeah, it has basically the three ways that we put food into our system. Yeah. Licking, eating, and drinking.
Yes.
It's funny. Like, if you look for the explanations, you might find some pretty interesting stuff.
It really shows
cars,
how human works.
Traffic jams.
Yeah, humans building or shelter, pictures of a traditional African home, of people fishing, of the UN building. I think these pictures actually explain much better what the human condition is. I don't know. I think words fall a little bit short when trying to explain these pictures.
Yeah, we could never do it justice. If you want to look at them, just Google Voyager Golden Record and you'll find all the images very easily, and also all of the other information that we're going to talk about. So I think that we're good for the images. We talked about them briefly, but I think we gave a pretty compelling explanation for them. Okay, so what's next?
Yeah, I think that we should just get right into it. Like, what the main point of this episode is, the music.
Yeah, the music.
Allow me to make a little introduction first. So, one of my favorite film soundtracks is the soundtrack composed by Hans Zimmer for Interstellar. And what I really enjoy is that when I was watching one of the interviews that Hans gave, you know, to the media when he was explaining how he composed the music for the film, is that Christopher Nolan never told him it was a space odyssey. He didn't tell him it was a space adventure. He told him something that thematically resonates much more with the audience. He told Hans, this is a story about a father and his daughter, and about how the father has to go away in a journey. And I think anyone who has watched Interstellar can remember the first notes of the main theme, you know, that long, I think it's a D, that just repeats da 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 da. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is that a lot of people, when they watch the film, give a lot of praise to the music because they felt like the music represented space, was very good to represent the idea of space and the feeling of being a space traveler. But the beautiful thing is that it wasn't originally made with that intention. It was just trying to portray the feeling of longing, of missing someone. And that's what I find beautiful about the music that's within the record. It represents, it's kind of like the opposite that happens in Interstellar. It's not about representing space. It's about representing humans, and about how music in its core is about expressing our feelings through a very abstract medium, which is sound. Music is maybe the most mathematical art there is, because if you think about it, it's just air that vibrates in funny how do you say it?
In funny ways. Well, like in patterns, or yeah, I would say that music is basically a fun way to describe a lot of math and a lot of physics. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, music is basically, it's maybe math, the art form.
Yeah, it's the art form of mathematics. Yeah, so okay.
I was just going to mention, you know, one of the interesting things about the record is that it doesn't begin with music. It begins with a greeting. It begins with something that's so human that basically every language has a form of greeting. So it's a kind of a way of the humans of 1977 kind of like saying hello to anyone that's out there. And, you know, then it plays greetings in 55 different languages. So kind of like a lot of the people groups in the world have a chance of giving a proper introduction, of getting a proper introduction to the space, to the space of the life form that's going to eventually going to find it.
Yeah, the Golden Record basically starts with those hello. Greetings. I think it also has like a short message from President Jimmy Carter, because he was the, if I'm not mistaken, he was the American president back in 1977 until 1981. So by the time they launched the Voyager spacecraft, he had the chance, the immense privilege of putting his voice into something that will outlast all of us. I think there's no.
Do you know if Jimmy Carter was a supporter of the space program?
I did not.
No, do you know?
Oh, I mean, I do know that he's an engineer by profession, but I did not know that he was, you know, basically or fond of the space program per se. I'm sure that he supported it, as all American presidents do. Even if they don't, they say they do. But yeah, I think that may be a little bit besides the point, because we do have a lot of music to get through on the Golden Record, and I think we should do it right now, because that's what goes after the greetings. That's, you know.
Yeah, it's
basically begins, what we're here for.
Yeah, what I find wonderful is that it begins with the sounds of the earth, which is a compilation by my multiple artists. I think that's where Dark Was the Night and Cold Was the Ground plays.
Yes. So the rest of the Golden Record is basically a section that has about 55 minutes of music from all over the world and from many different periods in history. And it also has a section with a lot of the most common sounds that we have on Earth. So volcanoes, earthquakes, thunder, what else? Wind, rain, or different animals making their sounds, or what else? Or trains, or cars, or airplanes, or people talking. That's basically a way to tell whatever life form finds the record eventually that this is what the planet sounds like, both in nature and within society.
A question that can be asked about the, you know, the purpose of the record is that we as humans assume that what's going to eventually find the spacecraft is kind of similar to us. So we assume that not only it can see, but it can also hear, and that not only it can hear, but its way of listening and interpreting sounds is similar to us. We as humans are the most musical animal of them all, and we make our music in the most different way out of all the animals. And it's kind of like a long shot to assume that the space civilization that hopefully will find it can interpret these sounds in the same way that we do.
Or who even knows if they... It might just
be gibberish to them.
Yeah, or maybe they won't be able to listen to it at all, because the frequencies that humans are capable of listening at range between 20 and 20,000 hertz. And who knows how the audio receptors, if they have them even, of the life form that finds it, who knows if those ranges overlap. So, you know, it's a needle in a haystack. We don't know, but we still do it because you never know.
Because we might, because who knows?
Yeah, because why not? I mean, I don't think it cost that much to put a 12-inch record inside a spacecraft, so might as well do it. You might learn some things about...
I find it interesting that it's a copper record, right?
Yeah. I think so.
It's a copper plated in gold, so it's not like a solid piece of gold that was engraved. That will have been maybe too heavy to be playable.
It's possible, yeah.
So, what piece in specific would you like to talk about?
There are a lot of tracks that I know that neither one of us knows, and that probably no one that is listening to this podcast knows, but there are around 4 or 5, considering the artist or the song specifically, because a couple of these are recent enough for us to know them. So one of them is Johnny B. Goody by Chuck Berry. It's pretty much the pioneer.
How do you pronounce it? Johnny B. Goody?
Is that what it's... I don't know if that's the way you pronounce it.
Well, I think it's just... I just pronounce it how Chuck Berry sings it. Johnny B. Good.
All right. Just considering the at the end, but yeah, that's a fair point. Okay, so what can you tell us about this song?
Well, the beautiful thing about Johnny B. Good is kind of relates... from what I know about the song is that it's kind of like a semi-biographical song. So Berry wrote it about... Yeah, about a lot of the experience that he had, you know, when he says that he's not very good he's not very good with anything, but he can play a mean guitar. And what I find interesting is that it's such an iconic song that represents pop culture and the idea
in the '60s
and the cultural zeitgeist of the '50s. It definitely represents perfectly what it was about back then.
It's basically the explosion of rock and roll in the second half of the 20th century. That's
You don't know how much it annoys me that people forget Chuck Berry. You know how much it pisses me off when people say that the father of rock and roll is Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. and completely skip Chuck Berry.
Yeah, there are so many guitarists that deserve that title way more than Elvis Presley does.
I would say you could go back even further. You know, people with like Fats Domino and Little Richard.
Oh yeah, rest in peace. Died this week, didn't he?
Holy shit, did he?
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah, Little Richard died. I think he died on Sunday.
Oh, actually. Fuck, he did.
Right, yeah, so, but...
He was really old.
Yeah, he was really old and 87. One of the greats, definitely.
Yeah.
An absolute savage. Okay,
yeah, he's truly one of the greats because he's the one who composed Tutti Frutti, and that was the song that made Elvis Presley popular. So he was one of the guys that got stolen from...
Yeah, an absolute ripoff. What a shame. Okay, what else can we look at here? We also have a few songs from all over the world. I know that since this is a mission by NASA and by mostly American scientists, many of the songs here will be pretty centric around not necessarily American music, but Western
culture. But mostly European culture.
Yeah, European and Western culture. So we have a lot of Beethoven, Bach, Mozart... some music from Mexico.
There's
also
a Stravinsky.
Yeah.
We also have that. One of the things that I find interesting is that if the Voyager Golden Record had been sent, had been launched by the Russians, there will not be things like the Navajo Night Chant that's on the record. So it shows like, although it tries to portray humanity as a whole, there's a lot of like American elements to the things that are within the record, because I don't know if you know, but Igor Stravinsky, he lived for a while in New York, so there's a little bit of you know, the Rite of Spring and everything that Igor Stravinsky composed kind of like has been adopted by American culture.
it's a bit inevitable. I mean, I don't blame them, because if you have the opportunity to send a timeless piece of information into outer space, you might as well try to showcase your culture and your stuff as much as you can. Okay. One last song that I would like us to discuss briefly. NASA is a very
multicultural entity. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go on.
Oh, so the last song that I would like us to talk about briefly, since we are running on 39 minutes already. We should probably mention it briefly, because it definitely has a big impact on us personally, and I think it's
this is by far the most. I know what you're going to mention. This is basically why we're making this episode.
Yeah, basically, when we talked about this song a few weeks ago, the idea popped into my head when I discovered that it was part of the Golden Record. I think it's a nice way to end the episode, don't you think?
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of a downer, because we'll have to talk about the history of it, but maybe in the way that the audience might interpret it, it could be a little bit hopeful. Yeah,
definitely.
Do you want to be the one who introduces it?
All right. Yeah, sure. The song we are talking about is called "Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground." It was performed by American gospel singer Blind Willie Johnson. It's a really old song. I think it's from the 1920s. And it's basically the song that portrays the emotion of isolation and of loneliness on the record. I think that many of the songs here represent different emotions and different situations of all paths of life. And this one specifically talks about that emotion of sadness and isolation. And when you think about the life of Blind Willie Johnson, it kind of makes a whole lot more sense.
I think it portrays a much deeper emotion that, you know, I don't think it's sadness. I think it's something much deeper. I think it portrays the emotion of despair.
Okay.
All right. So allow me to make a little bit of introduction. If I remember correctly, there were a lot of blind musicians back in the 1920s. Well, there have been blind musicians all around history, but I think from the late 1800s to the early 1920s, there was kind of like a spike in blind African American men and women, because if I remember correctly, because of Jim Crow and the racial policies in the United States back then, the medicine that the African Americans could have access to was usually pretty low quality medicine. I don't remember at the moment the name of the medicine, but there was this medicine that was given to pregnant women to help them with a little bit of the pain they will have during their pregnancy. The issue with that particular medicine is that it causes blindness and many developmental issues within the fetus. That's why there were so many blind musicians back then. There's Blind Willie Johnson, Blind Willie McTell, and there are lists and lists of young African American musicians that were born blind, and although many of them might not know it, it was probably caused by that. So the thing about Blind Willie Johnson is that he was definitely an unlucky man. He was born losing, because first of all, he was born blind, black, in the 1920s in the American South. And God, you know, his story is just bloody depressing. He really, you know, he was one of those how do you call the musicians that go around singing stories? Bards, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, bards, but I don't know if we can associate music from the American South of the 20th century to that. I would
there's some names for them.
Gospel, maybe?
No, I mean specifically the name vagabond musicians.
I don't know. I would just call them travelers or something.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty beautiful. Do you want to talk a little bit about him?
I don't know. I think we just, other than all the things that he went through, which you already mentioned, that his life was basically winning the opposite of the lottery, and all the things that he had to go through, he basically died on the floor. And he died homeless because I think his house burned down
shortly before he died. His house did burn down.
Yeah, it's just...
The most annoying thing is that, if I remember correctly, the story, it could have been prevented, but it ended up burning down because of incompetency.
Not that he would have been able to do much, considering he couldn't see shit, so...
Yeah, and he also had pneumonia.
Did he? Oh.
Or he acquired it because he, you know, after he lost his house, not only was he dirt poor, but, you know, he wasn't able to get any sort of a paying job. So there's some thunder around here. That sounds good. So I think maybe the reason why Carl Sagan, you know, put it on the record is because the life of Blind Willie Johnson is a life of a man. Is a story of kind of like the doom vagabond. He was someone who was born losing. He was someone who was born without any luck. And when he wrote "Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground," he was someone who wasn't poetically thinking. He wasn't like trying to write something about a feeling he had never experienced before. He was, when he made the song, he was talking about his experience, because he had to live in an eternal darkness, and eventually he died on the ground in a very cold night.
On a very cold ground. But I would say that we can end this story on a high note, because even though his life was a bit of a downer, we can say that his legacy is definitely going to outlast humanity itself. The fact that his most famous song is on the most important piece of music ever assembled, I would say that it's a pretty nice legacy to have, even if your life was pretty much, for lack of a better word, shit.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that song is just behind Beethoven. So, you know, for the people who were creating the Voyager Golden Record, Blind Willie Johnson, a poor blind black man from the late 1800s, was just as important as the great Ludwig van Beethoven.
And that's that's something pretty nice, and it's a nice way to remember him. And his music will live on and will reach into the outermost parts of space. And if someone or something happens to intercept this record, maybe, who knows? Maybe they will listen to Blind Willie Johnson and say, in whatever way they communicate, what a great song, what a great feeling. Just, you know, if I was him, I would be proud of myself.
Yeah, there might not be any heaven or hell, but there's definitely an outer space, and a piece of Blind Willie Johnson will forever roam the galaxy.
Indeed. All right. I think that's a nice way to end this topic. Yeah, I think we covered a lot of the things that involve both the technical and scientific aspects of this project, and at the same time we focused on our main passion and the main reason we created this podcast, which is talking about music and its cultural impact at both levels of society and, in this case, the universe.
Yeah. If I may say one last thing to our audience, if you have the time, because it's a very long record. It's like, what, 5 hours?
Yeah, considering all the sounds and the greetings, yeah. Yeah, around 5 hours.
So if you have the time, give yourself the chance of listening to it, because I think there's a lot to be learned from it. And go back and rewatch Cosmos. And yeah, it might have not been the central focus of this episode, and we should definitely develop an episode around the late, great Carl Sagan. But we this will. is a huge piece of his legacy. And thankfully, NASA has been kind enough to give it to us, to the people. And today, I think we should be very grateful of that, because although we live in very strange times, we can take solace that there's still beauty in humanity.
All right, and there will always will be. Thank you. If you made it all the way over here, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you very much. This episode was almost 20 minutes longer than the one we published last week, but still, if you made it all the way here, thank you very much. Stay tuned. We definitely want to keep this going. We want to publish at the very least, one episode every week. We still don't know what we're going to talk about next week. Do we? I don't think so.
Well, I think it will be very interesting, not only for us, but for the audience, to bring our first guest. I think we should either develop the American Idiot episode or the, you know, film breakups episode, which is not necessarily an episode about breakups in film, but how breakups are portrayed in film.
Or something like that. An episode about filmmaking or an episode about music. Yeah, definitely. We should have a guest for the next episode. Might make it more dynamic and interesting to hear a voice other than ours.
Yeah, I would love that eventually you get to an episode with more than one guest. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, eventually, if people are hooked, we might make these episodes a little bit longer, but for now, thank you very much for watching or for listening. I apologize. Again, thank you for coming all the way over here, and stay tuned.
See ya.
Right, bye.